Accession number 17581, Reel 2.
Mr. White, Reel 2. So after the fall of Malta, can you take me through what happened to you next, please?
We went back to Egypt to try and do the invasion of Sicily. That was the whole idea. When we landed at Egypt, they gave us our first meal, square meal, we've had for 2 years. And he couldn't eat it. The chap's stomachs were, they shrink. We don't eat food. And none of us could finish the dinner off. Well, then we trained for the invasion of Sicily. On the sand, we used to cut out boats, make marks in the sand, and train, jumping out the boats, all done on the sand, for the invasion from the sea.
Did they tell you where you were going?
Yes, eventually. That was our whole idea. They said we were going to be able to get our own back, as they called it. And we'd done the invasion of Sicily. We landed on the wrong beach because it was rough. But on our arms, we wore the Maltese cross for propaganda reasons, because Lord Ho-Ho said that all the troops in Malta were their prisoners. And so we wore the Maltese cross on our arms when we invaded land on Sicily. And we had a rather hectic time there.
What kind of ship did you go into the beaches at Sicily?
I went out on the LST, a tank landing craft. I had a carrier and a gun behind me. But the troops went on landing craft, ordinary craft for troops, you know, the small ones. Mine was a bit bigger, because we had tanks behind us, and my carrier, my gun, landed.
And do you remember which beach it was in Sicily?
Oh, I don't know if I put a name on there or not. I think I did. Couldn't remember that.
Your friend says it might be Pakina, anyway.
Yeah.
And was this a night landing or day landing? Or
it's at dawn, actually. A first light.
And did you get your feet wet? Or was it a dry landing?
Yeah, no. I didn't have my six-pounder gun then that time. We had a two-pounders on a portee, they called it. A small lorry. But we had to land ourselves, and we was up to our chest with water.
Were you under fire as you landed?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Heavy fire?
Quite a lot on mortar, on Sicily. But 39 days that Arnold was captured in.
And so once you got onto the beach at Sicily, did you fire personally?
Not then, not till we got to a place called Agira. It's a little town on top of a small mountain, actually. And there's two hills there. Those are called the pyramids. And that's the Canadians actually captured Agira, but it took us quite a long time, because their guns that was cut into the rock used to fire it and go back again. And you couldn't see where they were.
So what part did you play in the attack on Agira?
On Agira, with the Germans coming forward, they're trying to get to counterattack us with their light tanks, and we had to go at them there.
So you got your...
But we had only two pounders at that time, and they weren't very effective at all against armoured cars and things like that. But against the tanks, not much good at all. And when we were in Sicily, that's when they brought the six-pounders out, which made a big difference to us. They could engage these tanks with confidence.
So this was your first time in action against the Germans?
Really, in Sicily, yes. Yeah. First time we met them.
What did you think?
We found a difference between them and the Italians. Well, they were very good.
And did your unit have many casualties against the Germans at Agira?
No, not many. The rifle companies got a few. We lost quite a few people in Sicily. But I think we lost more casualties with malaria. We did battle casualties in Sicily. It was a terrible place for malaria.
Did you get malaria?
No, I was lucky. I never got it. We was given these methicillin tablets every day. They take twice a day. But on a march, you see lads, there's four late, there's four to the grain. They catch them like that.
So did the people who caught malaria not take the tablets?
Well, some were, I think so. I think they took them. But you're just lucky. I mean, night times, they used to come over to on squadrons, these mosquitoes. They said they'd dog-bang you, laying on the floor, and then they come. And we lost a lot with malaria, casualties. In fact, my old friend, it affected him when he got back home, not right there. But it affected him when he got home here. It caught up with him.
Was there anything you could do to keep the mosquitoes off?
Not really. We used to have these neckerchiefs, like a netting. Netting, camouflage. We'd put over our face and put our arms up inside to cover our wrists. Because the wrists they go for. You've got to cover your wrist up, you see, where your pulse is. And that's all you could do. I mean, just lay there and hope for the best. But these methicillin tablets, I took them regularly, and it didn't affect me, not the malaria. But it turned our eyeballs yellow, so we had jaundice.
Did you have much to do with the civilians in Sicily?
Not a lot. I didn't, anyway. I don't think rifle companies did. And it's somebody back at base might have done, you know, but we were out in the open all the time. Didn't see many of them.
You said Egira was the first place, really, that you fought the Germans in Sicily.
We had the company, the Hampshires, had a real battle there at Egira. The Canadians captured Egira, actually. But going up to Egira, that's where we had the trouble. And our lads, our brigade, not only us, the Devons and Dorsets as well, our brigade. But they done very well.
Which other places did you... Were you personally in fighting at in Sicily?
There's Riga Buto, Egira. Oh, God.
What form did the fighting take on Sicily as far as you were concerned?
Our companies, hand to hand, quite often.
Were you in hand to hand?
No, I was on my gun. I was just behind them, just guarding them from the tanks. But the actual infantry rifle companies, they were hand-to-hand quite often in Sicily.
Did your anti-tank gun actually knock any German tanks out in Sicily?
Yes. I can recall four.
Can you tell me what happened?
There was one time, there were some buildings ahead of us and a tank come around the corner, just showed his turret through. We hit that, must have given me a headache. He retired. And there's another one, was the word come round, there was tanks about. You could hear them, but you couldn't see them. But we see this one, it's Mark IV. He come forward, and you just see him above the hedgerow. We got him, put that one out. And also, I don't know if I should say this, we knocked out one of our own. Engineer's tank, because when you retire a tank, when you retire, you turn your gun to face the enemy when you're retiring. But this one didn't. In the excitement, he just coming away, and we see him. The word come in, there's tanks about. We hit him. I don't know what happened. Would he kill anybody? I couldn't say. But we stopped him, and got them out for as well. Same time. And in France, we got one or two in France.
We come on
time. Yeah, that, yeah.
But with the German tanks that you knocked out in Sicily, would the crews have been killed?
I think so. Because when you fire at these tanks, you had your bring gun lined up. So if you try to jump at the turret, you shot them as they jumped at the turret. That's their first place of escape, at the turret, which is the only way you could get out. And that's what we had to do. That's why we had the bring gun.
Did you have any incoming fire against your anti-tank gun?
Once or twice, but didn't get hit, luckily. You know, that's the thing with, if you take on a tank, you got be sure you hit him. Otherwise, if he sees a flash of your gun, that's it, usually. If you don't get him, you get the next one. And you can't move a ton and a quarter gun either way very quick, or your carrier. So you got to be sure you hit him, which we did, luckily.
Was your gun well camouflaged?
It was just painted green, that's all. But we used to camouflage it with leaves and bushes and things. Even in the barrel of the gun, where you see the black hole through a hedgerow, if you looked at the hedgerow, you see the black hole, the muzzle. You couldn't hide it, so you used to put leaves in there, inside the hole of the muzzle, so it wouldn't show anybody in front of you. It was always covered in trees and bushes and little leaves and things like that. We'd done that. But the actual gun, we just painted green like everything else.
What kind of range would you fire at the tanks from?
Oh, about 500 yards, 600 yards, if you could. It just depends what area you get. You know, on a plane, which is tank country, you could take him on from the distance. But when it's close country, they're on you, out of a bush or rain a house. So you've got to be pretty quick. You've got to be ready for them. You hear them anyway, and the infantry lets you know they're about. That's why we had these, actually, was morale effect as well. Because I told you, the lads weren't frightened of the Germans. But the tanks upset them. You felt so helpless.
And you said that during the Sicily campaign, you changed over from 2-pounders to 6-pounders?
Six pounders, yeah. That was towards the end of the campaign. We had 6-pounders given us, which made a big difference. But we used to have him being in portees as a lorry, rather tall. You couldn't discard or hide it. If I have a hedgerow, you could see it, you see. And we used to have ramps to run the gun up inside the lorry. Then we want to get it out, down the ramp again. But with a carrier, it was attached to the back all the time. A carrier is very low, and it's fast, and you get across country in awkward places where a car can't get. That's a good idea. I don't know who thought that idea up, but it was very good with a 6-pounder on the back. With that weigh ton and a quarter. So, you know, you couldn't just get it away very quick.
So what did the carrier look like?
Very good.
What did it look like?
A brain carrier. Just look a little tank. You've seen them, haven't you? The tracks, track vehicle. But they're very good. They're wonderful little things, really. They're getting cross country, up awkward places, across fields and things, and much better than the portee.
And after Sicily, what happened to you then?
We was at Piedmont, the last place we had any battle at all, and Monty visited us, Montgomery, the battalion, and he said he was of us, of our brigade and our battalion, and I want to take you everywhere I go. You want to come with me? We groaned at that because he looked across Messina Straits and he said, that's our next objective, Italy. Which eventually it did.
What impression did Montgomery make on you?
He's a very nice man. I think he was. He's a good general. And every time he'd come up to us, we used to all line up like the regiments do. He'd say, no, come on. Craig Ramey, hand out cigarettes to everybody that he could there. And he said, no, your next job would be Italy. Well, the 8th Army landed at the toe of Italy, and our brigade landed at Pizzo in the middle of the retreating German army. That was our objective that day, and that was rough weather again. We landed on the wrong beach.
How did the landing at Pisa compare with the landing in Pacino?
Oh, it was pretty rough, actually. And so we're on the wrong beach for a start. But eventually we did get ashore. But towards evening, we were very nearly pushed back into the sea, our brigade. They counterattacked. But luckily for us, the advanced elements of the 8th Army caught up with us. And we had all the cooks with their arms, but they never in a fight usually, but all the cooks had their guns ready for this evening. We thought we were going to counterattack. Dawn broke the next morning. A lovely day. We looked on the coast. They were blowing up bridges. They retreated, luckily for us. the 8th Army have reached us.
But did you personally have to re-embark from the beach?
No. We just back to the beach as far as we got.
How far inland had you got when you had to retreat?
Oh, about a mile or so, that's all. Not very far. But luckily, even the Marine commandos, they were on the wrong beach. It was so rough. They landed on the wrong beach. And we'd already landed and got our gun in position, and suddenly round the corner come these Marine commandos, all black and phases. They looked at us so surprised. They said, "How did we get here?" We already landed before them. They were landed far in the coast in the wrong place.
But when the Germans counterattacked, what did they counterattack with?
Infantry, tanks. But I suppose they sent a message back to the 8th Army, and the advance elements caught up with us, and they retreated. They didn't stand and fight then. They retreated. All on the coast road, they were blowing up bridges. Then we went on farther for a few days in Italy, and our brigade that landed at Salerno, Hampshire Brigade, not a brigade, 128 Brigade, and we thought we were going up to relieve them. But suddenly the word come round, hand in your heavy weapons, just keep your sidearms, you're going home. Well, we didn't believe it, because we went abroad 4 years then, never come back to England again. But we did, we come home. And we come home to do what? D-Day.
But when you got home, did you have preparations for D-Day?
Yes. We got to Long Melford in Suffolk. And we trained for D-Day there. But we were going to be the brigade in the rear. We weren't going to do the attack, actually, on the landing. But Monty changed his mind at the last minute. We'd already done two. So we'd had the experience of landing from the sea, and we had to go in again, the Hampshires.
Anything that happened to you at Long Melford?
Long Melford, visited by the King, King George. He visited us at Long Melford. And all we were doing there was training, that's all. Ready for the invasion of France.
Obviously you weren't doing amphibious work at Long
Melford. No, just training. Usual thing, drill and then firing and stuff, and we used to train with a lot of ammunition then.
Did they feel that you didn't need any more amphibious landings training?
Well, I suppose so, because we'd done it twice. We knew the drill, and that's why Monty changed his mind. He couldn't take the risk. If we'd have failed on that landing, the whole war in Europe would have been different. But we're the first British troops to land the Hampshires, set foot.
Were you still with the anti-tank platoon?
Yes.
Six-pounders?
Six-pounders. All the way through.
You were a sergeant by now?
Yeah. I was made up in mortar before we went to Egypt to a sergeant.
Can you take me through step by step the procedure for going across on D-Day? Give as much detail as you can about
it. Well, we were in the New Forest. We ended up in the New Forest and in camps in there. Not only us, I mean thousands of troops from the New Forest. But our brigade was there. And we should carry on training there, go through Southampton, on the ships, and come back again. Because all done with this secrecy, you see. He didn't want to let us know what we were going to do. We'd done it about three times. Embarked, disembarked again, come back to camp, New Forest. Then one day, the balloon went up. We were enclosed in the forest. We couldn't get out. And we went off from Southampton. People didn't take notice of us. They thought, it's just a training thing again. But it wasn't. It was a real thing. And we were floating around at Spithead for about all night long.
What boat were you in?
I was on this tank landing craft that took carriers and tanks and lorries as well. The infantry was in just the smaller ones with a platoon of infantry alone. And about all through the night, it was raining, and the sea, the rough, it was terrible. The worst weather they've had for 20 years on the 6th of June. And a lot of our people, they got shot, never left the landing craft. They were seasick. You imagine that, being seasick and have to fight, land and fight as well. Terrible.
So you were in Southampton Water, were you?
The rain spread out all night long, rain, going rain. Till the time we come to land, and that was at 7:35 in the morning. And the rifle companies went in first, then we had to go beyond them, because my carrier and anything was waterproofed. So when we landed, we had to get all the waterproofing off before we could fire the thing, which we'd done. But we had no tank support at all, not our battalion, the Hampshires, because they had these tanks with the skirts on, used to float on the water. It was so rough, they were sinking, so they stopped sending them. So actually, the Hampshires went into action with just their sidearms alone. That's why I feel very afraid of them.
As you went in on D-Day, what could you see personally?
Couldn't see much at all, really. Just the shells firing and mortars and snipers. That was the thing we dreaded, was snipers. They're everywhere. Our CO, he got wounded as he landed. And Major Martin, he come ashore to take over. He stepped ashore, he got shot, sniper, got him. And when I landed, I was speaking to a wireless operator. He just sighed and fell forward. What middle of his forehead, snipers. They're everywhere, up in trees, tied up in trees, in houses. And we used to dread that more than anything else was the snipers. You never knew where they were, how far away they were.
Why were they dreaded more than anything else?
We couldn't see them. And they had these high-powered rifles with telescopic sights. They could be 1,000 yards, more than that, away from you. You couldn't see them. And very often we shot them up. We see them up in trees. They were tied up in trees. We shot them up there and they dangled down. We shot them. Especially in the Bacchus country, where it's all these sunken roads and little lanes and hedgerows. The vision you could see was no more than about 100 metres across one field to the other. And the Germans were beyond those hedgerows. You never knew where they were. You could hear them, but you couldn't see them. And every time we moved on a little lane, fire come down immediately. They heard the tanks or cars start up, fire come down. We couldn't understand this. And as we advanced, in this orchard, we found a huge tower built of wood, and at the top of it, had all the scenery all around the Bacchus country, all painted, with all the ranges of every little road. So as soon as they heard us saying that, they looked where it was coming from, the road, fire was down on it straight away, till we captured this thing. Of course, the idea was go through and capture these V2 rocket sites. That was our first objective, to stop them bombing England. Which the lads did, or well, not only us, 50 did, I mean. That was our division.
And in the Bocage country, was your anti-tank gun in action against German tanks?
Yeah, two or three times. But the view, I mean, you imagine 100 metres away, it was hedgerows and trees, and you couldn't see a thing. You could just hear them. And until they come close to the hedgerow, then you see the top of the tower, probably, of this tank, which we had to go at that when we did. And the sound, you'd be sitting there at night time or day time, you hear these tracks moving, you couldn't see a thing. And going down this country road, you could hear them, you didn't know where they were, the Germans themselves, down these lanes. That's how it was in Normandy. It was cutting thrust all the time up these lanes. And eventually, somebody had a brilliant idea. We go across country, leave the roads. So they blew up the hedgerows, put these wooden stakes in the ditches where the tanks get across, our carriers get across, and we advanced across country. And that surprised him. He had all the ranges for the roads, but not the fields in between. And that started the comeback for us. Instead of losing the road, went straight across country at them.
Were the German tanks used the same as the type used in Sicily?
Mark IV, we had more target tanks in France. Yeah, they're big ones. We didn't engage any of them, only once. But luckily, the American tanks come up at the same time, and he moved away. I was on a roadway, right in the open, nowhere else I could go on a road, and he's coming straight towards us. But the Sherman tanks come up in the field alongside us, and he retreated and went back, which I'm glad he did, because we couldn't have shot it. The armour in front was so thick, he could never have penetrated a target tank, not from the front. We had to get him from the side. And luckily for us, he retreated. I said my prayers that day.
How many German tanks might your gun have knocked out in...
Our platoon, I think our platoon got about six. Don't say a lot, but it's very important place where they got them. Could be that with our infantry, you know, with the companies, the rifle companies. But about six our lot got. There's other regiments had them, of course. The Devons had them, our brigade. The Dorsets, they had them, of course. But our own, we came for about six tanks.
And your own gun? Did your own gun knock any out?
We got two.
Can you describe what happened on those two occasions?
Well, we see the thing coming, and it wasn't a target tank, luckily. It was these Mark 4s. And we had the Zabo at the time then, which penetrated the tank. And we stopped him, stopped two of those, with the sort of jump at the top, and actually you fire at them, and they stand a chance once you get hit like that. And other than that, when we weren't firing a gun, we were infantry. That was our job. We were just normal infantry, rifle company. There was no tanks about. We took our chance in the line. And in Normandy, you see, there was nowhere to fire at. But 100 metres, 80 metres between the fields, you had no range at all. When you've got open country, you can sight your gun much better. You've got a wider range. But you imagine till you do hedgerows, about 80 metres, that's all you got. And you've got to be quick if they come out the hedgerow. Otherwise, you got it yourself.
Which did you prefer doing yourself, the anti-tank work or the infantry work?
Anti-tank, really. Oh, yeah. Because we were on our own, more or less. Our own little unit. And very often we was on our own. But nobody else near us at all. But you see, we can't go forward with a carrier and a gun. We got to have infantry in front of us first. Like even the tanks today. The tanks are like infantry around them. They feel exposed and no infantry around them. Because they can creep up to them and put them down their turret. Grenades and things like that. So the tank people wanted infantry around their tank. Well, I was the same. I wanted infantry in front of me. But we had one CO. He thought I was a tank. He made us lead the way up these lanes, a carrier. I couldn't turn around the gun. But he got killed. He's a brave man, but he got killed. And somebody else took over, another colonel. We understood it more. I mean, the infantry got to go first, on foot.
Any other incidents you can recount that happened to you in Normandy?
Oh, there's lots of things. Anything special I'm trying to think? Hot. Yes, I must mention Hotot. Because when we landed, we advanced inland in France now to Hotot, a little village called Hotot, which is insignificant, really, in peacetime. But they had arterial roads there, crossroads, which is very important to the Germans. And when we got there, not only us, of course, the 50 do, I'm talking about our division now and our brigade, Monty said we got to hold that line. We had to stay there at Hotot.